Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.
Good afternoon. First of all, you have got some glasses. If you use them, the 3D glasses, the red one is for the left eye and the blue one is for the right eye.
Just so we can hear you.
Okay.
You don't have to lean into it. Just talk more.
Say again. Now they can hear you.
Okay. The glasses that you got are 3D glasses, and they will be used for some of the photographs that I will show you. And the red one is for the left eye, and the blue one is for the right eye. First of all, I want to thank the organizers of the conference, Sue Benford and Joe Marino, for the opportunity to give this presentation here. My presentation summarizes work connected with digitizing shroud photographs taken by Giuseppe Henrier in 1931, enhancing the digitized images to improve details, then translating the enhanced images' grayscale data into depth data, generating a sequence of up to 625 images of each of these, and combining these images with a holoprinter to produce holograms, 3D images of the shroud. It also summarizes my study of these holograms and discovery of heretofore unseen details, which confirm many previous findings and reveal some surprises. In 2001, my wife and I moved to Panama, the country where she was born. Being retired, I started to make wood sculptures as a hobby. In 2004, I decided to sculpt the Pietà, but I had an accident and fractured a vertebra. For 5 months, I was unable to work, so I used this time to search the internet for the most original face of Jesus Christ and Mary, his mother, to use in the Pietà sculpture. My search found two images called Agero Poeta, or not made with human hands, and they are the image on the tilma of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico and the image of the man of the Shroud of Turin. I later used both face images in the Pietà sculpture, as you can see. Observations of 3D information in the Shroud. Like we know, the Shroud of Turin is a textile made of flax. One side of the shroud shows the front and the back image of a crucified man. The image is superficial, meaning it is located on the surface of the uppermost fibers. The inside of these image fibers, that are 10 to 20 times thinner than a human hair, doesn't show this process. The image itself shows some qualities that are important for the 3D investigations. The image displays the light and dark characteristics that you normally observe in a photographic negative, and that was discovered in 1898 when Secondo Pia made the first photographs of the shroud. After developing his negative glass plates, he found to his surprise that they showed a positive image of the man on the shroud. Studying the image in the early part of the last century, Professor Paul Vignon made the observation that the image on the shroud varied inversely with the close-to-body distance, which means that the parts of the body that were close to the cloth were imaged darker than the parts that were further away. The density of the image is proportional to the distance between the body and the cloth and is caused by the fact that more fibers per unit area are discolored. This translates to 3D information encoding of the image in the grayscale of the photographs. Dr. Jackson and Jumper confirmed the 3D information in 1976, and later work done by Professor Tamborelli from the University of Turin confirmed this also. Dr. Jackson and Jumper used a densitometer to extract the grayscale information, and then, with the help of the VP8 image analyzer from Mr. Schumacher, translated this information into vertical relief, which resulted in the first three-dimensional photos of the shroud image. They were able to conclude that Vignon's theory was correct. The work of Professor Tamborelli confirmed this also. It is important to note that if you use any regular photograph in this process, the result will be distortion and flattening of any three-dimensional features because there is no photograph that contains this 3D information that we find in the image on the shroud. For the 3D work, what is important, we have to understand what is a grayscale. A densitometer measures the differences in density in a photograph. In a black and white photograph, black areas are dense with information and white areas are void of information. Look at the right side, the original image of the man on the shroud. The in-between areas are many shades of gray, from almost white to almost black. You can assign a different number or value to each shade of gray. For example, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 represents black and 10 white. All numbers between 1 and 10 represent various shades of gray. This is a grayscale or gray map, where different numbers represent different densities. Subsequently, these numbers are translated mathematically into vertical height on the z-axis. Holographic observations. I was familiar with the 3D concept because I founded and for many years worked in an ultrasound center in Curaçao. I also studied the theory of the holographic universe from Dr. Suskind, Van het Hooft and Wheeler. So I was also very familiar with the concept of holography. There were two observations in particular that caught my attention. The image appears more distinct at a distance and fades when viewed at certain angles, particularly as one comes closer to the shroud. The image is faint, without well-defined boundaries, so the eye has no point of reference and it appears simply as variation of the background density. Secondly, after the fire in 1997, Aldo Guareschi, a professional photographer who was very familiar with the image, because he was a collaborator, he was working together with Henriet, was asked to photo document the examination of the shroud. He observed the following. This is the moment that after the fire the shroud was examined. Moving around the table, with the shroud laid out horizontally, I saw this image so faded as if to practically disappear, while from other angles it seems as if the figure were almost outside the sheet. These two observations hint at holographic qualities, indicating that apart from the grayscale with the built-in 3D information, there might be holographic information present in the form of an interference or phase pattern. In order to investigate this possibility, I decided to form a team of experts and to produce holograms based on the scientifically proven 3D information in the grayscale of the image. That led us in a different direction of the 3D research with some unexpected results. Holography. Shortly said, holography is from 3D to 2D and back to 3D again. A hologram is a light wave interference pattern of a 3D image recorded on a special photographic film, flat, 2D, that, when illuminated properly, can reproduce the three-dimensional image. First of all, we have to know and understand what interference is. Interference means a mixing of two waves. As for example, when we throw two stones simultaneously into water, the two resulting wave patterns will meet and intermix. We call this intermixing interference. The waves can be any waves, for example, water waves, sound waves, or light waves. To produce a hologram, light waves, lasers, are being used to create the interference pattern. This is another example of a master hologram that could be an apple or whatever. This is information of a 3D object. Why do we use lasers to produce holograms? A laser beam consists of photons of the same size, all moving in the same direction. The wave packets are aligned together and all of the same frequency. This is known as coherent light and has the ability to contain intelligent information. And this info wave has a precise mathematical form. Producing a hologram, the traditional way. To produce a hologram, the laser beam is split into two beams. This is a beam splitter. A reference on the left side and an object beam that goes to the apple. The reference beam is widened by a lens or a curved mirror and aimed directly at a sheet of holographic film. The bastard. The object beam is also minded, but aimed at a physical 3D object, the subject of the hologram, which reflects the light onto the same film. The two beams meet, and like the waves in the water, they intermix and interact, forming an interference pattern that is recorded. This is the master hologram. So we have put our 3D information on a flat surface and fixed that there in a holographic plate. From the master hologram, we can produce copies that, when illuminated with monochromatic light, for example, a halogen lamp, from the same angle that the reference beam hit the plate, can be seen in 3D again. So here in this case, we have only the reference beam on the left side. It hits the plate, and then floating in the air, we have the apple, very detailed, but in light. The light beam, the reference beam, is a reversed reference beam that produces a real image of the 3D object. Another way of doing this, because the master holograms are of glass, so it's very difficult to transport them without breaking them, so you make copies, and that is done basically in the same way as you have the apple floating in the air. So the information goes from the master to a special photographic plate, and that you can produce in many different sizes. An important thing of the master hologram is that a hologram in general contains information about the whole image. If you break a hologram in multiple pieces, you have multiple holograms, each containing information about the whole image. That would mean, for example, if the theoretical possibility that there would be that kind of information present in the shroud, that if you only have a small part of the shroud, you could reproduce the whole image, including the missing upper arms. But that's theory. The different stages of the process to create a hologram of the Shroud of Turin that we followed was first of all the photographic material. We used second and third generation copies of the original photographs made by Giuseppe Henrier in 1931 that were graciously made available to us by Alan and Mary Wenger. In those days, 1931, the most reliable, light-sensitive material was an autochromatic emulsion, which was sensitive to the blue and green elements of white light and insensitive to red, and that resulted in an enhancement of the image, which we, of course, needed because we wanted to make holograms of the image only. The next stage is the digitalization of the negatives. We digitized the Henrier negatives to facilitate translation of image density information into grayscale numbers with 70 to 100 pixels per millimeter. This is a histogram that shows that what we did with the digitalization, we took most of the information out of the central part of the shroud and not the sides, because we were not so interested in the sides, but only in the image of the man on the shroud. The next stage, and you have to use your 3D glasses now, is a very important step in producing the holograms from a 2D object like the Shroud of Turin is. Because holography you can only make from 3D objects, you can make a hologram. So we had to create the 3D, which is the conversion process from 2 to 3D. Bernardo Galmarini, an Argentinian 3D expert, translated the grayscale levels into depth data on the z-axis and, where necessary, repaired and softened existing image areas that were void of 3D information, perhaps the result of historic insult and damage. As we know, there are many areas in the image that have no information. But we will come back on that.
let me dim the light. Oh, okay. Dim the light. Yeah. Have to do it. Here we go. There we go. Okay.
Right. In this process, Bernardo used a virtual camera moving along a horizontal path over the 3D model from center to leftmost and rightmost, and interpolated all other images. The result is a 3D image that contains all existing distance information recorded in the grayscale. Here you basically go from the grayscale on the left, where we took the blood out, with intermediate stages to the conversion process on the right side. Basically what you do is, if you would have the values from 1 to 10, you take layers 9, 8, 7, 6, and so on, because you know that that number exists in a plane, in the grayscale information, and then later on you have to interpolate that till the complete image again. The next stage was, you can take your glasses off, the next stage is the creating of the master hologram using a computer-generated object beam. The Dutch Holographic Laboratory in Holland had developed a very special holoprinter, the DFCH holoprinter, and they employed an LCOS chip which has a resolution of 1920 by 1080 pixels, like high-definition television, to create a computer-generated master hologram from the sequence of the 625 images. So basically, instead of the apple, you have now the computer there that contains all the 3D information that is in the image of the shroud that you feed to the laser. And like we said, the laser can contain lots of information and have a mathematical form. And you can feed that as an object beam again to the master, a holographic plate, and the other one, the reference beam, they will interact again and you will have all the information on the master. Once you have produced the master hologram, you can make copies. Now we have to use the glasses again. Observations in the holograms. The holograms provide a great opportunity to view the image on the shroud in 3D. These observations confirmed many of the previous findings and revealed some new findings. Let us begin with observations on the dorsal image, then the frontal image, and finally the facial image. Observations in the 3D dorsal image. The upper part of the head fades out, indicating that the head is bent forward. The hair falls down along the neck and the back and looks like wet. It appears rope-like in the middle, similar to a ponytail as mentioned in the literature. The buttocks do not look flattened but rather tensed as in rigor mortis. An important observation is also that the images of the flagellation wounds follow the curved surfaces of the buttocks. This is something that an artist cannot produce, of course. If he would do that in 2D, you would have straight lines sticking out on the side and not following the curves of the buttocks. The legs in the dorsal image look quite confusing. The upper part of the anatomical right leg contains very little 3D data, and the left leg contains areas void of any 3D data that, after conversion from 2D to 3D, show up as holes. Everything that has no information is the original shroud. So if you draw out the three-dimensional figure, the original shroud stays behind. Like you can see here, this should move, but it doesn't move. Is there something we can do, Barry?
What?
This is a little movie.
That's a movie?
Yeah.
Is there, it should play.
It
not playing, huh?
Not playing.
Tell me why.
No.
Is there a...
Yeah,
this is sure. PowerPoint,
it
should play.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I don't know why either. Well, basically this is a little movie where you see the body move from left to right and you can appreciate the 3D very well. But okay.
Escape.
Okay. To appreciate the degree of bending of the leg, we will have to rely on data from the frontal image because there's a lot of information missing here. The anatomical right foot is clearly visible, the sole of the foot, as is the tip of the left foot that seems to be crossed over the right foot. Observations in the 3D frontal image. In the depth map, the chest appears inclined in an upward position with respect to the pelvis area, as if inclined towards the viewer. The chest also appears to be expanded. Also, the abdomen is bulging. The arms appears to be rigid and oriented in an almost horizontal plane. The elbows are not inclined downwards. They rather seem to lie in a plane together with the lower and missing upper arms. The anatomical left lower arm, shows the elbow higher than the left hand, which is crossed over the right hand in a natural bending. The right wrist is under the left hand, over the space between the two legs. And the right hand angles upwards, following the curvature of the upper left leg, with the fingers bent downward along the left leg curvature. The left hand is bent at the wrist and fingers in a downward position. We can better appreciate the position of the legs in this frontal view. Both legs are bent, with the anatomical left leg bent a little more than the right leg and partly covering it. This one here. The anatomical left foot crosses over the right foot in the form of an X, and the tips of the toes of the left foot are visible. That's why you can identify it. To see the position of the feet was extremely difficult, and we needed a lot of additional photographs before we really found out how the position was exactly. There's a lot of digital noise in that area. Well, this was supposed to be a nice movie too, but okay, it is not moving. To show difficulties in the interpretation of these 3D images, I refer to a rope-like 3D shape crossing the left hand and an unknown little 3D object on the fingers of this hand. The question what it is remains open. Here you can see there's something in 3D here, and there's something in 3D here. But what it is, we don't know, because you cannot even see the shape of the fingers here anymore, but there is evidently something in 3D. Might be a rope, I don't know. Observations in the 3D facial image. In conventional shroud photographs of the face, we observe a blood spot seemingly hovering above the head. In the 3D image, however, this blood spot appears to rest on top of the head. Like we know, the blood images result from actual blood contact. That is the effect that you would have if you would put a towel on a wet face and you open it up, then the sides will be very outside the face. That is what happened with the blood spot here also. When they opened up, then the blood spot went up, but it is actually on top of the head. During the 2D to 3D conversion process, image areas that were void of 3D information in the gray map showed up as holes. Like I explained before, that is the real shroud, so that stays behind. Looking at the face, there were multiple little holes on the forehead, the right and left sides of the face. Okay. Sorry. All these areas here. Here, 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 the side of the face here, on this spot, in the beard, is void of information. Also here on this side you can see multiple spots. So the anatomical right side of the mustache and beard and the middle of the lower part of the beard. When we saw this, I remembered photographs of the face and middle part of the body in the book by Dr. Alan and Mary Wenger, where Professor Avino Andanin of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem had drawn in images of flowers and plants that he had discovered in the Henriet photographs. This was done by Professor Avino many years ago already, where he drew in, and you can see on some places on the face, you can see these flowers. Here you see the same drawing in of Professor Abinowam around the hands, the two arms and the hands, where in the body we also find imageless areas. In November 2007, we teamed up with Professor Danin, and he did follow-up studies on this, and he will tell you about his results later on. The part of the beard in the middle, where everybody thinks that it had been ripped out, in the holograms you can see that that missing part is only very superficial, and that the whole beard is completely intact. If you look later at the photographs, you will see that. So Professor Danin had a solution for that too, and it contradicts basically the fact that part of the beard was ripped out. Observations in the 3D frontal and dorsal view of the body image are like two bas-reliefs. When you join them together, however, you find that a layer of about 12 centimeters is missing from the middle of the body. This coincides with similar measurements of the distance between the frontal and dorsal head images. If you measure the distance on the shroud of the top of the head, frontal and dorsal, that's about the same part that is missing. So when it was folded over the head, whatever happened with the middle part of the body, that is also seen in the space between the top of the two heads. Under the beard, in the area of the neck, we found an oval-shaped object of about 11.5 by 5 centimeters, showing on the surface in relief what appears to be three Hebrew or Aramaic letters. The letters used in both alphabets are similar. Pursuant to this finding, we did two follow-up studies. You can see under the beard, in a hologram, one, two, three shapes. Here you can see them again. It's the shape of something, one, two, three. And on this photograph, it is pretty clear. One, two, three. You see here the shape of an object. I was very well aware about the criticism of many people on images that were found on the shroud. So when I saw the letters for the first time, more than 2 years ago, I kept very quiet about this, and I set up a set of experimental studies to confirm what I had found before I came out with this. So first of all, what I did was this. We researched photographs of the 3D studies that were done by Dr. Jackson Jumper, Professor Tamborelli, Professor Nello Balosino, Aldo Guareschi with his photorelief technique. They all contained the vertical relief properties observed in the hologram, confirming the presence of an object under the beard. Here you can see the work that was done by Aldo Guareschi with the photorelief technique. And you can see that there is clearly here a vertical relief, the same like you see in the face, or the same like all protruding parts here, or the fingers, or whatever. In every 3D study, it shows up right away. There's a vertical relief here. There's a vertical relief here again. Like here you see a fold. This is also a fold. There's a little fold on the top of this, but under it you see very clearly the shape of a solid object. Here it's visible again. I have more photographs of that, but this is basically the studies that we did to confirm that there is something solid under the beard. There was something solid under the beard. This is the copper image that is in the Museo della Sindone in Turin, specially made for blind people. And here you can see very clearly that there's a vertical relief. You can also see on the surface that there are vertical reliefs on the surface itself. The next step that we did was this. We researched many, many photographs of the face taken by different photographers. And we had an opportunity in November 2007 to have access to the extensive collection of the 1978 photographs of Vernon Miller. The photographs of Vernon Miller were donated by Vernon to Tom Di Muola, in Raleigh, and he made them accessible to us. Many of these photographs showed the oval outline of the object and several of them the shape of the 3D letters. According to photographic experts that we consulted, the reason the letters are visible in some photos and not others, but the shape in others, could be due to differences in depth of fields resulting from different lighting conditions and aperture settings chosen by the photographers. Here you get a series of photographs. For this you need your 3D glasses. This is a 3D study, I forgot to mention this. This is a 3D study that we did, specifically concentrating on the neck area. So don't look at the rest of the face. But you can see really, like floating in the air, something 3D with 1, 2, 3 letters. Now you can take off your glasses again. I have a sequence of photographs where you can see that there is grayscale information here. Here again, there's always the grayscale information here. Even on very vague photographs, Jean Durante, there is grayscale information. Here again, there's the grayscale information here under the beard. The three letters were identified. What I did was I made, being a sculptor of course, I made an example of what maybe what is. And looking at the 3D studies, you can see that there's something in relief on top. So the letters are seemingly in relief like this. The three letters were identified, reading from right to left, as one does in Hebrew or Aramaic, as Ayin, Aleph, and Nun. Now, calligraphy used to be my hobby. And as the letters of these alphabets are written in calligraphic form, in the past, I used them many times to exercise my calligraphic skills. So I was very familiar with the shape of the letters. That's why I recognized these letters, because normally, if you don't know the alphabet, you wouldn't even recognize it. However, I do not read Hebrew or Aramaic, so in October of last year, being in Jerusalem, I consulted experts in Old Hebrew and Aramaic. They showed me the two most consulted Hebrew and Aramaic dictionaries, a comprehensive etymological dictionary of the Hebrew language for readers of English by Ernest Klein, and a dictionary of the Targum, the Talmud Babli and Yerushalmi, and the Midrashic literature by Marcus Yastrov. And there it says in Hebrew, small cattle, sheep. In the other one, small cattle, sheep or goats. In Aramaic, this word is pronounced as an and means the lamb. An example of that is, for example, in the translation from Hebrew to Aramaic of Psalm 119, verse 176. Ibn Ezra, famous translator, translates this word as an, meaning the lamp. This is research being done by Bishop Jacob Barclay. So the Aramaic word Ayin Aleph Nun means the lamp. Now, here we have the Shroud of Turin, with the image of a crucified man, who according to tradition was Jesus Christ, and under the beard an object upon whose surface is written in Aramaic the word, the lamp. And here you have basically the end of the scientific part, and now you come to explain this, you come in theology. Now, according to me, it's like the Shema, like Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, hear Israel. The Lord your God and God, they are one. The immanent and the transcendent, they are one. The material world and the spiritual world, they are two sides of the same coin. One can explain, the other one can explain the meaning. So here you have, with science, you find a solid object, you find three letters, you know it means the lamp, but what does the lamp mean in this context? Well, we come here on the terrain of theology, and as I am not a theologian, I consulted the experts again. So what they told was this. In the Gospels is mentioned that Jesus Christ approaches the River Jordan where John the Baptist was teaching and baptizing people. When John sees Jesus, he tells the people, "Behold, There comes the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of this world. During the Catholic Eucharist, when the priest shows the bread, he says, "This is the body of Jesus Christ, the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of this world." In the book of the Apocalypse by John, the word lamb is mentioned 28 times and always means Jesus Christ. During the Last Supper, where according to the Jewish tradition of the Pesach meal, wine, bread and lamb should have been present, the Gospels only mention bread and wine. The reason is that Jesus Christ himself is the lamb and is going to be sacrificed the next day. That was obviously very clear to the authors of the Gospels. I believe, personally, that this finding on the image of the Shroud of Turin is important. An oval-shaped object under the beard of the man on the shroud, containing three letters that form the word Am, which means, is Aramaic, and which means the lamb. And the connection between the lamb and Jesus Christ is obvious. I want to give a special thanks to my sponsors. Like yesterday, the discussion was about the money. And in the past, I have been organizing big events, so I'm very specialized also in looking for sponsors, luckily enough. Tony and Laurie Micares, Michelle and Donnie Soans, Rob van der Voort and David Struckman. I also want to thank the help that I got in Turin from the authorities, especially Don Giuseppe Ghiberti, and of the Legionnaires of Christ, with Father Guerra. Thanks also to Alan and Mary Wenger that provided the negatives, Tom Di Muwala, who was a great help in all this, and I want again to thank Sue and Joe Marino. Thank you very much.
Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.